At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to the Commonwealth Policy Center's Legislative Forum. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of CPC. And on this edition, we're going to talk about pro-life issues. On the first segment, we're going to talk about House Bill 91, the proposed constitutional amendment on abortion. And on the second segment, we're going to talk about the pro-life omnibus bill. That's House Bill 460. But joining me on the first session are some friends. We have with us State Representative Joe Fisher. He's the state rep from Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Representative Fisher, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And also we have Adia Wushner, former state rep from the same neck of the woods in Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, and now current executive director of Kentucky Right to Life. Adia, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Richard.
House Bill 91 is the bill that simply says, and I'll read it, to protect human life, nothing in this Constitution shall be construed to secure or protect a right to abortion or require the funding of abortion in Kentucky. This bill was introduced last session. It did pass the House, but it failed in the Senate. And I want to start with Representative Fisher. What makes you think, I'm going to start with this. Why is this bill necessary? Why is an amendment to the Constitution that simply says that that abortion is not a constitutional right? Why is that needed, Representative Fisher?
Well, for a long time, Richard, we've known the abortion lobby, their backup strategy if Roe v. Wade is overturned is to secure abortion rights through state constitutions. 11 state Supreme Courts have already recognized the right to an abortion in their respective state constitution, most recently Iowa and Kansas. The first state Supreme Court to recognize such a right was Tennessee back in 2004, but a decade later, the people of Tennessee passed their Yes for Life amendment to overturn the Tennessee Supreme Court. And last week, the Kansas House and Senate voted to place the same constitutional amendment on the ballot. Iowa Senate is looking at this bill right now. And in 2018, the people of Alabama and West Virginia passed this amendment. And in 2020, the people of Louisiana, by a vote of 62-38, passed this amendment. And so, and we've seen recently our Supreme Court, our state Supreme Court in the Florence Speedway case, they unanimously created an inherent right under the Constitution for the governor to declare an emergency and issue orders, thus bypassing the legislative branch. So without this constitutional amendment, can we really trust that the Kentucky Supreme Court will not suddenly discover other inherent rights in our state constitution?
Yeah. Representative Fisher, and that's precisely how we got abortion on demand across the country. It was the U.S. Supreme Court at the federal level that found a right to abortion in the U.S. Constitution, correct?
That's correct. And the intent of this bill is not to have another Roe v. Wade here in Kentucky.
Yeah, very good. Adia Wushner, you have been involved with the right to life battle for years, working to restore a sanctity of life ethic across Kentucky. How do you respond to the young woman who identifies as pro-choice and who says that this effort, House Bill 91, which says that we're going to make sure that abortion is not a constitutional right, how do you respond to her when she says, you're taking away my rights, the fundamental right for me to control my own body? How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I do it by clearing up what this constitutional amendment does. And I think Representative Fisher just clearly said it ensures that there is nothing in our Constitution that says there is a right for an abortion or taxpayer funding. And it really returns that and keeps that where it should be, not what the judges but exactly where it should be. And that's with the legislative body who are the lawmakers in the state. And that's what's important because there's a little confusion. So simply as it does, it establishes the, it cannot establish a right or not having a right to an abortion. It doesn't change current law. It protects the laws in a sense that are made by the legislative body, by our elected state officials. It doesn't ban any form of abortion. It only answers the question on whether the judges or the legislators, who should decide policy on abortion in the Commonwealth of Kentucky? And it clearly answers that question. So there's a little bit of misinformation when someone has said to me, oh, you're going to ban all abortions. We have passed legislation in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, pro-life legislation, and it protects what the lawmakers have done, those that have been elected by the majority of the people to set forth the laws here in the Commonwealth.
Very good. Representative Fisher, this bill was introduced last year. It did pass the House by a wide margin, but it failed in the Senate. What makes you believe that this bill can pass this session? It's a short session. You're about halfway through, I believe. Does it have a chance of passing?
If we work hard enough, I think it certainly does have a chance of passing. We were our time was limited last session by the COVID adjournment that came early in March. So I do think there is still time. We've got half the session to go. I think we'll put it on the fast track of the House and send it over to the Senate and ask them to hear it. There's plenty of time to get this done.
Very good. The latter provision in the amendment says that the right to abortion or require the funding of abortion is not a constitutional right. Does this impact, if this were to pass tomorrow, would it stop any public funding of abortion in Kentucky right now? Is there any public funding going on right now of abortion?
We don't really know the answer to that question without an audit of how the state is spending its funds. But it would allow us to pass, the legislature to pass laws that restrict funding for abortion. There would be no constitutional challenge to that right. Certainly, if we wanted to put a Hyde Amendment in a bill in Kentucky, if this passes, it could not be challenged in the Supreme Court.
Representative Fisher, do you expect a legal challenge if this were to pass? Could we expect a lawsuit from the ACLU or Planned Parenthood or a group like that?
Well, you can probably expect something from groups like that. However, as far as I am aware, none of these challenges have been successful in other states that have overturned their Supreme Court. So it's the will of the people. The Supreme Court has only overturned our state Supreme Court has overturned only one constitutional amendment that I'm aware of, and that was last year. But we certainly, this particular amendment will pass that type of scrutiny because the entire text of the amendment will be on the ballot for the people to read.
Very good. So we do know that there's several states that have enacted similar amendments to their constitution: Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, West Virginia, Louisiana, and then most recently, the Kansas legislature and the Iowa legislatures have recently enacted laws that amendments to their constitution that need to be ratified by the people. So we are seeing a trend. Other states have done this, and Kentucky could be, looks like maybe the eighth state to enact a similar law. Is that correct?
Right. These are all true red states that have a strong right to life ethic, that have seen the danger of the Supreme Court overruling the will of the people and their legislators.
Yeah, very good. Adia, there's a statement that the ACLU of Kentucky made regarding House Bill 91, and it's on their website. You can find it right now. It says, they say this, House Bill 91 is a politically motivated attempt to make abortion completely inaccessible in Kentucky. The government should never have the authority to force someone to remain pregnant against their will. How do you respond to that as a pro-life leader here in the Commonwealth?
Well, as you know, Richard, I am pro-life and pro-woman. And, you know, there are those points in a woman's life, she may find herself pregnant with an unintended pregnancy. But this, as I've already mentioned, there is nothing in this constitutional amendment that completely bans abortion in Kentucky. It protects the laws that we're making to protect the unborn. We've all worked to that end, along with laws that will and organizations that will help women seek alternatives if she's finds herself with an untimely pregnancy. But nothing in a constitutional amendment, which has to be voted on by the people, will totally ban. So that's really almost, I have to say, it's erroneous to make that statement in that context. What we're doing, though, is protecting the laws that have already been made in the state, that have already been upheld, that are on the books under that have passed by the legislature. You can say we're preempting like other states are. There's changes in, there are politically things happen in Washington. Should there be expanding of the court? Should there be a push to codify Roe on the national or federal level? We're working to that end, like I said, to protect the laws that are currently on the books. But there's nothing in this constitutional amendment that bans abortion. So that's an erroneous statement to be made.
Adi, I think what you said earlier in the beginning of your statement, that you're pro-life and pro-woman, sometimes people make a dichotomy that you're one or the other. But to be pro-life is actually in practice to be pro-woman, because roughly half of the pregnancies, half of the unborn children are female as well, aren't they?
Yes. And to make sure that women are always, you know, I fought for a long time, as you know, Richard, for informed consent, full and informed consent, so that the information when a woman is facing making those decisions, and that law has been upheld by the Court of Appeals, and then the Supreme Court didn't take that up. And that's our informed consent bill, that she has that information, the ultrasound is provided, should she wish to see it, listen to the baby's heartbeat, that those things are provided to the woman along with all the health information and the gestational development of her child, so that she's making a total informed consent as she faces an untimely pregnancy.
Very good. Kentucky has embraced pro-life legislation over the past 4 or 5 years. There have been, I count, 10 different pro-life provisions that have been enacted. Would you say that House Bill 91 keeps those provisions in place and would allow, prohibit, I should say, a judge from overturning them or finding a constitutional right? I'll go to Representative Fisher.
Yes, certainly. If this amendment passes, if the people of Kentucky vote to pass this amendment, that will prohibit judges from inserting their viewpoint about the law, or whether there's an implied constitutional right to an abortion. So, yes, it will have a significant effect. It will keep our current laws that we've passed for the past four sessions, and will enable them to be enforced here in Kentucky if they've not been overturned by the federal courts. And we have a number of those that are still on the books and can be enforced. This is a way of getting the issue, as Adia said, back to the legislature, back to the people, people's representatives. And the people of Kentucky, I believe, really want the opportunity to finally weigh in on this important issue, most important issue, in my view, of the last half century. They want to be the voice for the voiceless, and I believe they will overwhelmingly vote yes on this amendment.
Very good. I wish we had more time, but we are out. We are on a hard break. Representative Fisher, thank you for your good work on this bill. Adia Wishner, thank you for your good work on the pro-life front here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Policy Center Legislative Forum. Here we are with State Representative Nancy Tate from Brandenburg, Kentucky, to join us regarding the pro-life omnibus bill. Representative Tate, welcome to the program.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
All right. And of course, Adia Wushner has stayed with us for this segment. We thought it'd be great to have the executive director of Kentucky Right to Life to give her input and share her perspective on this bill. So, Representative Tate, I would just like to start out with this. There have been several pro-life bills passed in the last 4 to 5 years. Why would this bill be necessary, this pro-life omnibus bill?
Yeah, we're not obviously, you know, one of the things that's very important to us here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky is life, you know, from the from conception to natural death. And so it's very important for me as an individual, but then as the General Assembly, and then as organizations like yourself, and of course, Kentucky Right to Life, our intent is to work together to make sure that we preserve life. And, you know, while we're not competing with other states, one of the things that's very important to me is to, I'm a very competitive person. And one of the things that I'm very dissatisfied with is the fact that Kentucky is ranked like 18th as far as from a pro-life, pro-family, pro-woman perspective. And so I want to make sure that we are doing the most that we can from the Commonwealth, but then also as the nation as well. Because I know that as states work together, then of course that puts further emphasis from this to the Supreme Court that these things are very important to us as states, but then collectively, collectively as states as well.
Sure. So this is a 47-page bill. One of the highlights, in fact, on the very first page, there is a refining, if I could use that term, of the law when it comes to parental consent. That was a bill the legislature passed years ago. And Adia, I'm not sure if you were in the legislature when that passed. It might have been before your time.
That was authorized by State Senator, or at that time she was in the House, Katie Stein.
I was going to say that she was a pro-life champion back in the day. That was probably 25 years ago, I want to say, maybe longer than that. So she had a good bill. It did eventually pass both houses of the legislature, made it into law. So why, and this is for either one of you, why would that be necessary to revisit that again in House Bill 460?
From my perspective, and Unity, of course, obviously I want you to jump in here as well, but from my perspective, this is a further defining and further nailing down this legislation. You know, one of the things that I know that's been pointed out, and especially in other states, is how human trafficking is linked to abortions, and so especially abortions of minors. And so we want to make sure that the parents are involved when it comes to providing consent and being aware that their child is being engaged or is engaging in this type of activity. You know, we've gone as far as in schools, you can't even administer an aspirin without parental consent. And so something as serious and life is impacting as an abortion is, we certainly want to make sure that there's parental consent and involvement.
Very good. Adia, are you aware of loopholes that have been discovered in the old parental consent law? Are there, have parents or other people in that minor girl's life trying to find a way out of getting parental consent in order to get an abortion for her?
Over the years as a legislator, yes, you know, loopholes are the way that they've used the current law, used the court system, perhaps even the traffic court system to provide a guardian ad litem to step in place of that parent without the parent having any knowledge whatsoever. So it's a way that what we call the judicial bypass has been applied. And what I often say is that later in this young girl's life, that guardian ad litem, the individual that stood in place with that young girl, it's her family that's going to be there later. And so it's a tender process. It doesn't take away any rights, but it also makes sure that there's an involvement. It also enhances the physician's responsibility in ensuring who is they're authorizing with that minor. These are minor children that can't get their ears pierced, minor children, as, you know, when I worked on House Bill 3, and as Representative Tate just talked about the amount of human trafficking that goes on. I had a judge a couple years ago call me because there was a young girl being housed in Indiana, and they got a text that she was going to be brought to Kentucky for an abortion on that next Monday. And she was afraid. She'd been housed there. And so this does go on with that. And her parents would have no knowledge of it.
So to the point earlier, young girls can't have their ears pierced. They can't get an aspirin at their schools. But there are loopholes in some state laws that allow a minor child to get an abortion without their parents' knowledge. And that's something where I think all the parents tuning in and listening, I think that's something of concern to them. Because ultimately, parents really have the best interest of their daughter in mind. They should. Most do, anyway.
I was just going to add, this bill also says that financial cannot be the reasons, you know, the justification for this procedure on a minor, financial, that the court must find and ensure that the minor is not seeking abortion as a result of influence or pressure from an outside force, maybe from an adult or a person that's not a minor. So it has a lot of provisions. It really cleans up and redirects for us that minors consent for an abortion.
Okay. What other provisions are in this bill? Again, it's 47 pages long. It's called the Pro-Life Omnibus Bill. Representative Tate, you are the primary sponsor of this bill, if I'm correct.
That's correct. Yes, sir. And, you know, one of the things you've referred a couple of times to have been 47 pages, you know, one of the things, this is a very important bill, but I think it can quite simply be narrowed down to communication. Just like we talked about from a parental perspective, it could be narrowed down to communication, reporting, and compliance. And I think as we go through each one of these sections, we can point out how each one of them is communication and reporting, and then once again, compliance, as Adia said. And we'll talk about from a vital statistics perspective to make sure that we are complying with legislation that's been passed passed some time ago.
Yeah. Representative Tate, you've been involved with the pro-life movement for decades, as I understand it, involved with Kentucky Right to Life, former board member, maybe the chairman of the board, I can't remember. But you've heard the arguments on both sides. You're well aware of them. How do you respond when somebody in the pro-choice community, I don't really like to use that word, but the pro-choice, pro-abortion community says, look, there's a lot of issues to focus on in Kentucky, and you want to deal with what a woman does with her own body, with her own choice. She's in a tough situation. Many women really wish that they didn't have to have an abortion, but here's the state legislature spending time regulating an issue that's very private and very personal and probably just making it tougher for her. How do you respond to that?
Right. And I think that that's so important. And I think I talked about it just a little bit earlier when I said pro-life, pro-family, and pro-woman. You know, Adia and I have talked about this a lot, and we share a lot of very similar philosophies. You know, a lot of the things, we're not just pro-life legislators, or, you know, because Adia was a legislator in the past. We want to make sure that there's the legislation that we pass are the stepping stones for women to be able to have their children, to be able to have their career, to be able to have their education. And I think one of the things that we both are very successful women, we both, you know, we're married, we have children, we've had very successful careers. And so we're the demonstration of how women truly can have it all. It just maybe not necessarily all at exactly the same time. You know, life is just like seasons. And so, you know, at one point you might be having your education and you're working on your education in order to prepare for your career. You know, I was going to school while working and having a family all at the same time. And that was very, very difficult, but I was able to do that because of my very strong family network. And so, you know, while other women might not have that, the luxury that I have, I think that's where we come into from a community perspective. We can provide that support, as well as there are opportunities from a state perspective and from a federal perspective that we can give the person the leg up, you know, not necessarily hand out, but the opportunities to have it all in those different seasons.
Adia, are the young girls today getting that message that abortion, that they don't have to allow an unplanned pregnancy to change their plans, maybe? I'm hearing from Representative Tate that she's an example of somebody who was able to balance that. Of course, you had a good family network there to support you. But are young girls better understanding today that if they get pregnant while they're in college, or maybe early marriage and she might not be ready for that baby, are they becoming more pro-life, I guess, and seeing that that child might not be a hindrance, but that there's a path to welcoming the child into the world and then carrying on with their plans in life as well?
First of all, I've really been excited in working with Students for Life, because I'm hearing from them their experiences on campuses mm-hmm. and campus life and what that means and what they're hearing from. Because I said, what are they saying about life? And we talk about that. But I want to say that it's our job as organizations across the Commonwealth that link together, whether if they're not hearing it from their family and maybe they're not hearing that from their churches, that they realize there are organizations out there to support them. And that's part of the mission of Kentucky Right to Life is, you know, changing hearts, changing minds, saving lives and changing lives. And as we take on that mission, it's very important that if they're not hearing that mission, that message, how do we get that message to them? You know, Representative Tate talked about this, and we have similar backgrounds. You know, we know what it's like to be moms and wives and professionals and trying to juggle it all together. But suddenly when your life finds out something unexpectedly and you're very young, are there support systems there? As a former legislator, and I know Representative Tate is continuing to work in the areas of child abuse and neglect, making sure women that are struggling with addiction have the opportunity not just to deal with their addiction, and even if they're possibly pregnant, bringing that life to term, but family unification as she works in recovery. So I know you asked me about young people, but I guess I see this thread for women across all ages. And that's where we have to make a difference for them.
Very good. And I'm noticing that there is a shift in attitude towards unborn life. I would say that today Kentucky is more pro-life than it ever has been. You're seeing that reflected by the legislators that they're sending up to Frankfurt and by the pro-life bills that they're enacting. Obviously, these people have been getting reelected year after year, and we're seeing that pro-life trend continue. The research, by the way, shows that millennials are perhaps one of the most pro-life generations out there.
As they certainly should be, because, you know, a third of their generation has actually been annihilated. So yes. they should be, as far as I'm concerned, they should be angrily critical of what has happened in the past 30 to 40 years.
Okay. Representative Tate, we are out of time. I've got 30 seconds here. Could you speak? One of the provisions of this bill, House Bill 460, was a provision of the Hyde Amendment. Can you explain very briefly what that is and why it's in this bill?
Sure. I would be glad to. You know, right now we have current legislation in place that's called KRS 311715, and that basically prohibits the use of public agency funding to be used for abortions. So 40% of our budget that comes through Health and Family Services is actually from federal dollars. And so potentially some of those dollars are being used to fund abortions or abortion act related activity. So we want to make sure that none of the money that is used within our budget goes toward that type of activity.
Very good. I wish we had more time to unpack this. This has been a great discussion. State Representative Nancy Tate, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the good work. And Adia Wushner, Executive Director of Kentucky Right to Life, thank you so much as well.
Thank you for having us.